This is Christoph Kisun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity, where we explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. Today, I am joined by Chadwick Pearsall, doctoral candidate in political science at Idaho State. This morning, we are discussing the topic, the hidden power of dreaming in social movements. Chadwick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Christoph?
So given these circumstances, I'm just very excited. We can be here together in the studio doing this Zoom conversation recording.
We are together apart.
So tell me a little bit about what does that statement invoke in you? The hidden power of dreaming in social movements. What are you thinking?
Yeah, so for me, I think, you know, back to obviously anytime I hear dream, you know, I think of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, right? Mm. Which is what a lot of people know of MLK, even if they don't know anymore. And just the power that he and others like him, right? He was typical of people who are visionaries. So it doesn't end with him. But they have the ability to imagine different ways of being or different systems, right? So he's living in a society that views him as a second-class citizen, but he has the ability to imagine a more just society and then work towards that, right? And so he didn't realize or get to see a lot of the things that he was working to bring about, but he cast that vision, and that's, you know, that's obviously something that we continue to live into, and that probably, to be honest, people that are, you know, maybe our kids or people that come after us will also be looking back to MLK and his dream and others like him, and hopefully we don't always just have to look back to the 60s, right? You know, we have social leaders who are imagining systems that are less oppressive, that are more equal for all types of people.
Seem like a total fantasy. It doesn't even seem real, but we can make it real.
Right. And one thing I've seen with the protests is this a younger generation really being the people who are having those dreams, right? And for themselves. I think it is important to know the history and to know some of the people that have dreamed before, but I think it's really important and good and healthy that younger generations are also taking up that mantle for themselves. And sometimes that gets them criticized as, you know, as foolish or, you know, that's a fantasy world that will never be realized. These young people need to settle down and go home.
You're being reckless. There's a better way you can do this. All the criticisms they're getting.
Yeah. And the more you learn about history, the more you realize that was always the criticism, you know, leveled at everyone. And a lot of times these movements come from younger people who grew up in a world that they aren't accustomed to, right? They're fresh enough that they don't have that built up trauma that for older people, it just seems like, well, that's the way the world is. We can't change it. So we just have to accept it.
Yes.
But younger generations come along and say,
no.
Why is this the world? We refuse to accept it. You know, we don't know why you accepted it, and we sure are not, because we're not living our next 60, 70 years
like this.
In this system.
Yes.
No thanks.
Yes, no thanks. Look, we're grateful that you built it. I'm happy we have, from a lot of us, live in a pretty decent world, you know? We have technology, we have access to things. But in terms of the equality and the civil rights, there's just a lot to be demanded. And I think younger generations don't have that fear of the system in that way, you know? They don't see it as something static and fixed and something that just existed inevitably. It was invented by people and it can be changed by people.
Right, and I think it's important to recognize both that we live in a system that people have fought and given their lives for, right? And so we recognize the progress. We look back, I look back to people who did the work, you know, ever since, we could look back to abolitionists, right? Now, and then we look to people working during Reconstruction and things have gotten better. You know, we recognize the work that has been done, but at the same time, we realize that we are not where we want to be and we are not where they wanted us to be. And then we carry on that legacy of recognizing what has been done and the work that has been put in, and at the same time realizing the work that's yet to be done, and that is our work.
Right, 100%. And our dream, we have to kind of, okay, so yeah, MLK, I have a dream, but what is our dream? How are we going to extend that dream? And what do we want? What do we want to see for our future? Right? What kind of world do we want our children to grow up in? And there's something very powerful in that. And it's interesting because as children, it's so natural, right? As children, all of us are dreamers. We're always imagining things. We're always like playing games and thinking about fantasy worlds in our minds, role playing all the time. And some we just grow up and the world takes it away from you.
Yeah, no, I definitely think there's a part of that, right? It's a learned, we are told that those things aren't realistic, right? And
Yes,
so we
you
need to
have
get our
to
heads out of the clouds
put
and
away
just live
childlike
into the world.
things, right? It's time to put away childlike things. Stop dreaming, focus on your work, and now you're one of us.
Right. And at the
Yeah.
same time, we like a lot of the figures that we put on a pedestal, right? Like Elon Musk says,
Yes.
you know, I'm going to commercialize space travel, or right, any of these inventors that we look at and we put on this
Yes.
huge pedestal, they are the ones who thought ridiculous things.
Ridiculous things,
So
ludicrous things.
we tell our kids, you know, don't dream. And at the same time, the people that still dreamed and that didn't accept that message are the people that we really look up to, right? So we have this weird tension where we exalt it in the people that made it through and made it big, and yet we weed it out in most people.
Yes, exactly. It's such a contradictory process that is taking place within humanity. It's almost like we only dream or celebrate dreams when it reaffirms us, when it benefits us. But all the people on the other side who are dreaming for something else, something that doesn't necessarily directly impact you, they deserve to dream too.
Yeah, and we highlight the dreamers that succeeded, right? So
Always.
for every dreamer, inventor, you know, there's a bunch of people that had a big dream and failed, right? It's not that it was guaranteed to succeed. Lots of dreamers fail, but it's,
Right.
you know, they are the ones that progressed society and lead to new systems, more just systems.
100%. Yes, I like that. The voices of all those people who were silenced and their dreams, their stories were never told by the media. Nobody ever wrote a big fancy biography on their life. All of those people, their dreams were invested in this greater collective dream we've developed now.
That's one of the things that as I do more reading
Yeah.
into, right? Like we have flattened social movements, right? We see civil rights movements, you know, in the 50s, 60s, and a lot of people know, oh, Martin Luther King Jr., right? There's hundreds, thousands of other dreamers of people putting in the work. And when we act like MLK was the only person driving and sustaining, no, this movement
Right.
existed before him. It existed after him. There were plenty of women as well as men, right, doing all different kinds of work,
Agreed.
and there's dreamers everywhere in these movements.
So, Chadwick, if you had one piece of advice to give to all the people who are dreaming something that isn't real right now, what would you say?
Oh man, I would just say, look at history. You know, look at, you know, if we're speaking of racial social movements, look into people that have been doing work for hundreds of years in whatever their fight was, right? Whether that was abolition and the vision that there wouldn't be people enslaved, whether that was the right to vote, and realizing that dream that was, you know, there was, in some sense, there was no reason for them to believe
That was
that
possible.
Black people would realize the right to vote. Yeah, that they would finally be given that right that they should have had all the time, right? And so read what it was like for those people who dreamed impossible dreams, and maybe in their lifetime, maybe after their lifetime, those dreams were realized.
I love
But I think
that.
that kind of lays a template, and it helps dreamers understand that one, it's possible, but two, it's really hard, and it doesn't happen on its own.
100%. And just because it's hard doesn't mean you have to dream small. Dream big.
Absolutely.
If you're gonna do it, go all out. Dream as big as possible if you're gonna put in the work anyway. Yeah,
Absolutely.
I love that. I love that. This is Christoph Kassoun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity. Chadwick Pearsall and I have been discussing the topic, the hidden power of dreaming in social movements. Stay tuned as we continue to navigate diversity and discuss the topic, confronting the shared trauma of our past.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
So the topic of the night, confronting the shared trauma of our past. What does that make you think of? What is this trauma?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things. If we kind of zoom out, mm-hmm. I often think of something that civil rights lawyer and activist Bryan Stevenson talks about, where he just says, we need to acknowledge that the real history of the United States is as a post-genocidal country. Europeans came to North America when it was not an abandoned area, right? They slaughtered plenty of North Americans and they marginalized them, and they brought enslaved people into the land that had just been stolen from Native Americans. And that kind of kicks off, missing a lot of steps in between. That's right. Where there's a starting point to get to where we are today. Yeah. And that helps us understand a lot of the trauma that has always been here that maybe we didn't know the history of, right. or I think more likely that's not the history we tell, and it's on purpose, right? We like to tell an uplifting history. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but if we tell an uplifting history where we are triumphalist and we are the country of freedom and liberty, that only can sustain you so far if you start to read history, right? That the same people that wrote this document about freedom from tyranny and they used the word slavery, right? That they didn't mean that. They meant it in a sense that they thought they were enslaved and not represented. And these same visionaries, right, that we have been taught to deify, they enslaved people, they trafficked in people and flesh and abused people at the same time they were saying we're being abused by Great Britain.
Right. And they were sitting around and doing the same thing to other people.
The same thing and worse, right? Like, I'm not being represented and I'm being taxed. I'd rather take that than my body is being possessed by someone else.
Thank you. Trevor Noah said in his little breakdown of what's going on, he said, looting black bodies. Black bodies have always been looted. Could you imagine that concept of your body always being taken from you for some other purpose, for somebody else to make money?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that a lot of people don't understand, even if they know, right, a little bit about, people were enslaved. They don't, or oftentimes I would say, I'll just be personal about myself. I didn't understand, even when I had heard about slavery writ large, I didn't understand all the trauma inherent in that until I started reading about families being separated, right? And a child being born and being ripped out of the grasp of its mother and sold hundreds of miles away, right? Mm-hmm. And just the system was designed to be cruel. It was not an accident. It was about supremacy, power, control.
Yeah.
And it was ruthlessly efficient.
I don't think people realize, like, when we talk about slaves, they were thought of as property, you know. They were property. They weren't even human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always try and be really careful with my language too of, right, a slave. I was watching something last night and they were talking about how they avoid the term slave because that is an identity, right?
Right.
And these were enslaved people.
These were enslaved people
who were being acted upon unjustly. 100%. And it had nothing to do with their worth, their identity.
They were going through something temporarily that was imposed on them that they did not choose voluntarily. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it had nothing to do with who they were. Their identity had nothing to do with their status.
You're 100% right, because back in the Caribbean, when I learned history and we studied African slavery in great detail, particularly in the Caribbean context, but also in America and elsewhere, we always referred to them as enslaved Africans. Never once in my teachers said that word slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so language is important.
Yeah, that was something that I came to really late, right? I think that language and the language that we use is really important. So when I started to get into some of this dialogue, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't think I can ever refer to an enslaved person as a slave anymore.
Ever again,
whether or not, yeah, and some people would say, oh, that's really nitpicky, right? But I think in my mind, the language that we use really does knowingly and unknowingly shape how we frame things, how we live into them, how we envision what the
100%.
possibilities are.
Words have meaning. Whether you recognize it or not, it has meaning for other people. It
Absolutely,
does,
absolutely.
100%. So I'm really glad we're having this conversation about the shared trauma because my sense is that a lot of people are kind of very appalled by what is happening right now. And I think a lot of them are just thinking, well, this is just a reaction to police brutality alone. And I think they're not really seeing, and they haven't had the chance to have the conversation yet, that what people are really reacting to right now is 400 years and more of this type of exploitation, you know, physical, sexual, emotional, psychological, spiritual, cultural, any type of exploitation you can imagine has been inflicted onto this group of people, not by just America, by the entire world.
Absolutely.
And little to no reparations were given. I don't, did the US ever make any type of reparation to the African American group?
No,
No.
it was supposed to happen. It was part of Reconstruction, but you know, with Lincoln being assassinated, and then President Andrew Johnson decides that it's not worth, you know, the disunion that it is causing with the former Confederate states, and caves. And gives up on the project of Reconstruction.
Why are reparations important, do you think?
Mean, there's a lot of different reasons. I think it's interesting, right, that sometimes people will say, oh, you know, there's all these problems with reparations, but we can go back to Reconstruction, right? So go back 120 years, they realize that Black people were owed reparations. And if we look at what happened with emancipation, reparations actually were paid to enslavers, right? To people who trafficked in human bodies, in an effort to try and smooth that transition.
Right, of
The
them.
government would give reparations to people who had enslaved people, right? Because it was a property, the thinking was that it was a property transaction,
It
and
was like
they're going to try and smooth that over.
they lost goods, so the government had to help them.
Right. So there were
That's so
reparations,
crazy.
but they didn't actually repair injustice. They were reparations that only further entrenched injustice, right? Those same people that got reparations from the government were the same people that have been profiting off of enslaved labor.
How can we confront the shared trauma of our past?
I mean, there's probably a lot of ways. One way that I think I've been really influenced, again, to bring up Bryan Stevenson again. So he heads up an organization called the Equal Justice Initiative. And one of the things that they have done down in Montgomery, Alabama, is they opened two projects within the last 2 years. And one of them is a memorial, and one of them is a museum. And so the museum is called the Legacy Museum, and it's so the full title is the Legacy Museum from Enslavement to Mass Incarceration. And what they do is just they lay out a history of trauma, and they connect, as in the name, they connect enslavement directly to mass incarceration. Because I think sometimes people will say, well, we have mass incarceration and it's heavily skewed to Black and brown people and males, but also women. But that has nothing to do with our history of slavery. And what this museum does is it takes you through different time periods, and it shows with lots of examples how enslavement leads to an era of racialized terror and lynchings. And then that kind of transitions, and all of these overlap a little bit, and how that transitions to an era of what we kind of whitewash and call Jim Crow, which is, you know, apartheid, segregation, more racial violence. And then that leads into mass incarceration. And none of these things are separate. It's a continuation of, there's plenty of research on how people see Black bodies, right? And especially male Black bodies, they view them as more intimidating.
Terrifying.
If you see a Black person and then they, you know, they take them away, there's been some studies, and then they ask, you know, how tall do you think that person was, right? And
And they
then
overproject.
people consistently overproject, right? They were taller, they were more muscular, they, you know, And these things are not accidents. These things are left
Intentional.
over from this system of the way we see black bodies, right? And
Right.
then how that's a system that gets us from enslavement to mass incarceration. The other thing that EJI has done is they opened the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, and that's also kind of known as the Lynching Memorial. And they have pillars in this memorial. You descend into it, and as you go, what look like pillars are actually hanging from the ceiling, right? And that's to
Ooh.
symbolize lynched bodies. It's incredibly emotionally
Wow.
impactful and eerie, and just, you know, it grips you, and it's very
Mm.
emotional, beautifully constructed. And each
Wow.
one of these pillars has at least one name on it, and they represent a county in which a black person was lynched, you know. And so you descend, and there's thousands of these columns that are hanging from the ceiling, and there's thousands of names on them, and just the gravity of that, right, sinks into you. And so I think one of the things that the EJI has been really good about in trying to make us understand but also feel the trauma is that, you know, they're presenting you with information, and it's all backed up, you know, with extensive research, but it's also something that we feel. Because I think if it's just an intellectual thing, right, we
We're
can
missing
say,
something.
well, that was, yeah, we can say, well, that was unjust, but what happened, right?
Right, but when you feel
Instead,
it.
I think when we need to feel it, that will spur us to make the changes that this history should demand, but doesn't necessarily demand from us
Right.
unless we are emotionally
Connected,
troubled and
vulnerable.
disturbed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Intimacy. Intimacy. We need to create a space of intimacy between us and them, right? Whoever this us is and whoever this them is, right?
Yeah. And for me, I think with my
Empathy.
work and study of history and political science, it's not making it solely an intellectual exercise, right? I approach texts and people, right? If we want to look at current social movements, as a white male, right? One of the things, I want to be part of the solution, but I'm very aware that I need to approach that with humility and try and develop empathy. Because if I'm going to be effective, I need to listen and aid, not try and lead as a white male telling, you know, black and brown people what they need. I need to listen and help.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of needs to take 2 minutes and listen and just kind of think and process the reality of what is happening, but also process like the last 400 years, you know? That was a good time to get educated. That was a good time to go read some books by some prominent black authors. That was a good time to watch some real good black movies, you know? Listen to Kendrick's album if you didn't listen to it yet, you know? Now is the time to listen to some Bob Marley, to celebrate black voices and tell their story. And I think by doing that, it kind of helps us confront that trauma too, you know, that we've been part and parcel of, whether we contributed to it by actively traumatizing people different from us, or we propped up systems of oppression, right, that benefited us while traumatizing other people. That was just a good time to dig a little bit deeper, in my opinion, and educate yourself and have conversations with your friends and family.
Oh, I would absolutely, yeah, I would second everything you said. I think that as I've been in conversations with family and friends, I had a conversation the other night with a friend who said, you know, one thing that this last week has taught me, and the stuff I've been following and reading, they said, you know, was that I learned very little about US history, and that's angering to me, and that's saddening. And so this person is really kind of starting to find some of those resources and to learn those names and those stories, and each, you know, each enslaved person or each person that was lynched or beaten or, you know, not allowed to go to a school that was in their area and was better than the school they were forced to go to, right? Each one of these is a unique experience of trauma. And sometimes that can get lost in the numbers. But to really treat each one of these stories with the humanity and the anger that it deserves, right? That should drive us. And I do see people, and I'm hopeful that this will be an awakening for people who just
Right.
didn't know any better, right? They
Yeah.
grew up in a system that didn't teach them these things. And
Yeah.
in some instances, that's understandable. I think
A
for me,
100%,
a lot of this
yes.
learning came from, you know, seeing the debate around the Confederate monuments a couple years ago. And then I started to see references to events of, you know, racial violence. And I was like, I don't know what that is, right? So I put it into Google and I get down a rabbit trail of just learning this awful story that was never told to me. But those are really important stories for us to understand how we got to where we are today, to understand why is it that people are rioting, right? Or why is it that reparations are important? Because sometimes people say, okay, there was no one alive right now
Who went through that?
Was enslaved.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a classic example, a classic argument.
Factually
that's made.
True, right? But those systems and the trauma lives on right now, right?
It
like you were saying, 400 years. Yeah, I mean, there are hundreds of years of slavery. There was a 100-year period of apartheid racial separation.
Right.
If you look at it, I think one of the visuals that I really like is that another way of kind of driving this home is like a graph that looks linear, and it shows how long people were enslaved in this country, and then how long people were treated with two different sets of rules for, you know, then racial segregation. And then we've really had at most 50 years where people have been fully allowed to vote, right?
Right, right. That is not a long time, y'all. That is a very tiny window. And even though, yeah, we're allowed to vote, there is so much inconsistencies and irregularities in the voting system that is rigged against Black and brown people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, we see that in what we study with political science, right? And that's the overlap of political science, of history, of sociology, and all of these things help us to get a fuller picture, right? It's like looking at 2D or 3D or black and white and then color, right? These things all layer in order to help us really understand both what happened, how we got here. But
right.
I think just as important and maybe more important is once we're here, how do we get to somewhere different? Because I think obviously the people who are rioting, and I think a lot of other people who are not out on the streets or super vocal even necessarily don't want to be where we are now, right? We have hopes and dreams for a more equitable society.
100%. I think I thought of this analogy. I think of the Greek story of the Hydra, right? So it's this big monster and it has like a bunch of different heads, serpent heads. And every time you cut one head off, two more grow back. That the Hydra is racism. And each little head is each little thing. Police brutality is one head. African-Americans who've been overrepresented in prison populations, that's another head, right? The segregation, voting restrictions, that's another head. And you have to try and fight the entire beast. You can't just go after one head alone. You know, and that is the trauma I'm talking about. If I want anybody who's listening to this right now to get something from this conversation, it is this. The Hydra is what we are fighting. That is the shared trauma. I want you to see the full extent of the beast. It is huge and penetrating and pervasive, and it is everywhere and in almost everything we do. At least see the scale of it.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, for me, right, like what is my role? It's to listen to people who will say, you know, most Black and brown people can give you stories that white people don't necessarily have as their own, right? They can give concrete examples to, this was a time where I was treated like this. And as a white person, I'm like, I can't even imagine that being my reality. But to many Black and brown people, they're like, they don't know any different, unfortunately, right? As awful as that is, and white people will not see racism as a problem if they don't listen to people tell their stories of racism being a problem. And then, and this is where I think the humility to listen, to wait, and then the empathy to try and put yourself in that scenario, right? I can only go so far with it, but to try and imagine and feel that emotion. I was listening to an interview with Ta-Nehisi Coates that he gave with Colbert on The Late Show yesterday. It was an old interview, but I was watching it yesterday. And they were talking about how Ta-Nehisi Coates has written, his newest book is fiction. And he was saying, right, that part of the power of fiction is that we can expose people to different emotions. We can try and put them in the place of these injustices, where when I watch a story on the news, maybe I have trouble connecting that to me, but there's something about when I read fiction that we are embodying in some way, shape, or form, or coming into a relationship with these characters. And
Yes.
so that is a way that we can, even in small ways, right? And I don't mean to say this, oh, this means that we are equal participants in this trauma. No, not at all. But there's important ways in which the arts can help shorten this distance of otherness between white
Agreed.
people's experience and experiences of trauma by Black and Brown communities.
Yes, I agree. Art builds bridges. It reflects our own humanity back at us. And art is dreaming. Art is seeing. Really, really, really seeing. So I think there's a lot to be learned about this from that world too. Thank you so much, Hadwig. This was wonderful.
You bet. This has been an awesome privilege. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Stay safe, take care, and we'll be in touch.
Will do.
All
See you,
right.
Christoph.
See ya. This is Christoph Kassoon, and you've been listening to Navigating Diversity. Chadwick Pearsall and I have been discussing the topics, the hidden power of dreaming in social movements, and confronting the shared trauma of our past. Join us next week at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday as we continue to navigate diversity and explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. For more information on all episodes, visit kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity.